everybody. It's Friday. Happy Friday. It's the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Stephen still in Portland as he works on his Christine Sinclair book, Playing the Long Game, which is due out fall 2022, which we announced yesterday. Christine Sinclair even tweeted about it today. So it's officially officialized, Stephen. It is out there. People are quote tweeting it. They're replying to Christine Sinclair's tweet. Would you like to hear some of the responses to the breaking news today from Christine Sinclair's tweet?
Yes. Yes, I would. Would you like to be on my Twitter? Well, you know, because I need somebody, right, to be my Twitter.
Yeah, these are all good. It's okay. Overwhelmingly positive. Jeffrey says, oh my God, I need this. Barry says, sign me up. Anything that Stephen writes is a masterclass. Add in the greatest female soccer player in the world, and you've got my attention. All right, so pressure's on.
Yeah, it's very nice. Well, thank you for that. It's I was hanging out with Sink this morning and working away at this, and it is a great pleasure and an honor. So I am going to be busy though. So if you know, other than the 2 hours that I spend with you, Ben, every day,
right.
The other 22 are going to be, I've taken on a lot of work this week. But what the heck? It's a pandemic. I'm locked in my house. I might as well, right? It's either that or a hobby, right?
Yeah. Well, and you can't fish in the winter. I mean, unless you go ice fishing. But I've discussed this with you, I don't think on air. But yeah, ice fishing, not your deal. You need to be active when you're fishing, so you don't ice fish. So yeah, what else are you going to do but write a book right now?
Yeah, might as well. Might as well. And so that's, it's either that or you're crocheting. So I think I would. Mm-hmm. I'm better off writing a book.
Well, what I've decided to do, and I mentioned this on the show, was attempt to build a backyard rink for the first time in my life, in my backyard, and I have an update. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, please, because the last time I heard we talked about this, it was even though it was very cold, your rink was soupy, kind of, right? It was defying physics. So yeah, it's cold there again now, right? Like, is it really cold now?
Yeah, it was minus 16 this morning, and I am happy to report that I have a workable backyard rink for the first time in my natural life. My children were out there this morning. My six-year-old went out twice today. It is postage stamp size. But you know what? When you're six and you're 35 pounds, I'm sure it feels much bigger than it would if I were on that ice. But yeah, I did it. I feel so Canadian.
Well, congratulations. That is, because it was a little puzzling, to be honest. Like why you found water that would not freeze? Because really, this it seemed like maybe sabotage was involved. But I'm glad that the natural world is still in order and the water still freezes. So, well
that's
done.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It is frozen. It was a little brittle because it was actually too cold, and I was told that you don't want it too cold. But you know, I figured it out. It worked today. So good on me. Before we get to the Oilers, who are the talk of the sporting world in this country, at least. Sheldon Keefe followed up his comments after the Rangers game the other day, and you picked up on this nicely and kept bringing it up to Jeff Merrick, because I think you were correct in identifying it as pretty unusual for a head coach to call his team soft and do it multiple times. That's what Sheldon Keefe did after blowing yet another 3-1 lead to the Rangers and losing 6-3 at MSG. Before he even took a single question today, Stephen, he felt it necessary to go on about a minute and a half long diatribe about his comments, and he called it clarifying. He didn't say he apologized for it. He called it clarifying, and then said that he still has the utmost confidence in his group. Obviously, that was something that didn't sit well with people, or maybe it was something that, upon further reflection, Sheldon Keefe realized that them's some fighting words. That terminology is not standard fare for a head coach to call his team soft.
No, it's they're fighting words in hockey. And look, Sheldon Keefe's played enough hockey and coached enough hockey that he knows what that word means. And he I just can't, if he said it, he believed it, or he said it to prod his players to get the desired effect, to shock them, to move them in some way, right? There's only two, those are the only two explanations. You know, one is you know, it was just honest and in the heat of the moment, he didn't think about it. The other is he really thought about it and he knew exactly what it was going to do. It's this sort of suggests to me the former, right?
That yes.
He was being honest and he was hot and frustrated in that moment and he said something that he believed and then somebody told him, or maybe he reflected on it and said, my, I shouldn't have said that to them because they're not really soft. They're actually a good, hardworking team that can play heavy hockey in the playoffs, just like Brian Burke talks about and could win a Stanley Cup. Or, you know, his boss got on him and said, you better walk that one back. Or his captain talked to him and said, you know, we didn't appreciate that. Right? I would think that that did not go unnoticed within that dressing room and within the within the offices of the Toronto Maple Leafs, the executive offices. Like it's not one of those ones that just is going to blow by.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, this team, it's going through it a little bit right now, and the goaltending hasn't been as good as it's been throughout the majority of the season, and the leads aren't nearly as safe, especially in the second half of these hockey games. They're still very much inside the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference, still in the top three in the Atlantic. It's not like they have the worst record in all of the NHL since December 1st, like the Edmonton Oilers do. The Edmonton Oilers have been abominable, and going through the worst stretch of their season with all the pressure and all the media attention they've gotten this week, they lose 6-0 to the Florida Panthers yesterday. And the time for head coaches spurring on his team is probably gone and passed. But we'll get more info and more insight on that when we talk to Mark Spector right now of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. How's it going, Mark?
Oh, it's going dandy out here, guys. How's it going in Toronto?
Yeah, better, I guess. I mean, yeah, this team's biggest crisis was that they blew a lead and the head coach called them soft for a day, but that only lasted a day. He retracted, kind of, today.
Yeah,
so, I mean, Dave Tippett is still the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, and I'm not saying that this is his fault, but at a certain point, like, we are talking about a prolonged period of horrible, horrible play. What do you expect a coaching change to be the first move?
No, I don't. I don't. And here's why. I think when you're general manager Ken Holland and you are solely responsible for setting up a team that has no goaltending because your starter is 39 years old and falling apart, and the backup is a backup, and he's been forced to be the number one all year, and he's not nearly good enough. So the major problem that ails this team / this coach is the fact he's got zero goaltending. So, you know, you tell me, boys, can you look a coach in the eye and say, I'm not giving you any goaltending, but you didn't win, so I'm going to fire you? Or do you at least owe him to do what Tippett or what Holland's been spending today doing, calling the Philadelphia Flyers about a goalie, right? Calling the Dallas Stars about Braden Holtby. You know, he's trying to get the guy a goalie just to get a new face in here. Smith's supposed to come back next week. I really, really, really believe that either they'll bring in Martin Jones from Philly or someone like that, or they'll let Smith get healthy and play some games before they fire the coach. That's what I think.
Well, that would be the right and fair thing, Spec. You know, like, although Lord knows their coaches have been fired for things that weren't their fault in the past, right? To try.
Yeah. Let me interrupt you. The one thing that I got to say is, you bring a new guy in and you give him this goaltending, you're not going to get the Bruce Boudreau bounce, right? You're going to bring a new guy in. He's going to get clobbered for the first 2 weeks till you find him a goalie anyway. So you might as well let that sit on the old guy, my thoughts.
Yeah, no, you're right. And Ken Holland, you know, is not, well, again, maybe that has to do with some of the coaches he had, but he hasn't, he's never fired a coach in midseason in his long career. So now, in terms of goaltending, the moves they can make, Spec, what are they going to have to do in terms of cap considerations to make that work? Does Koskinen have to leave in order for somebody to arrive?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you could send Koskinen down to the minors and get $1 million in cap relief off of that, right? So you bring in a $2 million goalie, you get $1 million relief, you make a couple little moves, you figure it out. You know, they put Turris on waivers today. So if they need to send Turris down and bury him in the minors, if you send Koskinen with them, that probably makes room for the price tag on the goalies I just named for you. They're both UFAs at the end of the season. Stopgap guys. So it can be done. It's not, you know, it's not impossible.
So, yeah, goaltending is obviously a major issue, probably issue number one. They have a team save percentage under 900. It's 899 now after yesterday's game. That's 28th in a 32-team National Hockey League. Is it the only one? Like, if we're going down the list of problems with this team, and let's say goaltending is number one, how big a gap is it before you get to number two?
Well, it's a pretty huge gap. It just is. Of nothing else works without goaltending, you know. The defense don't play the same way because they don't feel like they can. The forwards don't have confidence that they can maybe jump the zone a little because, oh my God, if there's a scoring chance, it's going to be in our net. So, listen, I want to make this clear. I feel sorry for Mikko Koskinen. He's a number two goalie. That's what he is. He's never, although he was handed a ridiculous salary by Peter Chiarelli a few years ago, he's just a backup goalie, and he's been forced into being a number one goalie, and he's just not that. So, you know, it's like taking me and making me the president of a multinational company and then wondering why the stock price goes down. Well, guess what? I don't know what I'm doing. You know, so I feel for Mikko Koskinen. He's been put in a terrible spot, and he's not delivering. At this point, their odds makers are making book on whether the team has less confidence in Koskinen or he has less confidence in himself. So, you know what? I can't even tell you what I know what the problems are in this team. They're too soft. They're not deep enough at forward. You know, their defense is okay. It's not great. But you can't even judge any of those things until you start getting some saves, right? That's just the way the game of hockey works.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, so if they, you know, and again, the guys you're talking about them getting potentially spec, you know, it's not the second coming of Patrick Roy or something. Those guys are, they're all available for a reason, right?
They're journeymen, and, man. Yep.
Yeah, pretty much. But I'm wondering if just, you know, it's just having somebody who's not who they have now. Like we've talked about how it's hard to get a read on a dressing room these days because nobody's in the dressing room, you know. And although the Oilers are, you know, giving a reasonably good indication of how they feel through Zoom calls these days, so there is that. But
that was actually alive and in person. But keep going.
Oh well, that's okay. Yeah, that's well, maybe we'll talk about that. But you know what? I wonder if just. You know, like you're right. It is kind of a build. It's if you give up a bad goal and you're falling behind almost every night, and there's the shoulder slump, and it's here we go again. And you know, that I've seen that rot out teams before, and maybe just somebody else between the pipes who isn't the guy who's there now, kind of liberates these guys. You know,
it's I'm not saying it fixes all the problems, but it's this has run its course. You know, watching a puck go through poor Mikko Koskinen and then looking over at the Oilers bench and having everyone try to pretend like they didn't notice. It's just, it's run its course. This is Ken Holland's biggest failure come true, biggest nightmare. Mike Smith's been hurt all year, and he doesn't have anyone else to play. He's got a kid up here, a young rookie they're hoping is the next Jordan Binnington, but he plays one game and he goes into COVID protocol. So back in comes old Mikko into the pipes, and he gives up six last night. Like, I feel sorry for Mikko Koskinen. He's in a terrible spot. And if he will, guys, come out and man the net Saturday night against Calgary. And, oh, my goodness me, it's like a 10-car pileup on the Don Valley Parkway, right? People are going to be rubbernecking on this thing from coast to coast on Saturday night, boys.
Yeah. It's hard to look away. It really is. I mean, and Steven just referenced the Jim Matheson back and forth with Leon Draisaitl earlier this week. I don't know. Is that just fodder for us? Is it because it was all over the place all week and it was picked up south of the border as well? Or is that indicative of anything? The emotion, I don't know, the level of frustration with this team?
Well, yeah, sure there is. You know what I'm going to say it's indicative of? I mean, I'm not getting into, you know, him being a guy who covers the Edmonton Oilers. You can imagine, gentlemen, this has been a topic I'm a little done with at this point, right? We've kind of spent the last 72 hours pounding away at that rock. So I'm not going back there. But here's what I'm going to say. Let's just look at it now from 30,000 feet. What have the Oilers been for the last 3 days since Leon Draisaitl really drove that conversation in that direction, right? When he came out and said, write what you want because you know everything. What happened after that? Well, I'll tell you what happened. You just said it, Ben. It went south of the border all over the place. It's been all over Sportsnet and TSN and CBC, every station. It's been the Edmonton Oilers have really been the laughing stock of the National Hockey League for the last 72 hours because of that incident. So what does that reflect on? Well, that's your leader out there on the podium who made that happen, right? That's your leader who went out there and instead of giving the old answer, look, Jim, there's really no one problem. There's a few things. We're working on it. Here's a few positives. Let's move on. He picked that fight, and that's how Leon Draisaitl led his team to be, frankly, a spectacle in the NHL for the last 3 days. Is that fair? I mean, they've been a spectacle, right? Do you think that this team in the state they're in, you think that's really what they needed the last few days, guys? You think that helped over here?
I'll go a step further, Speck, is that, you know, look, the old everybody hates us, that nobody believes in us, et cetera. Like that shtick is as old as sports, right?
Yep.
But it's not like they apparently rallied around him because they went out and lost 6-0.
No, they didn't rally around them. It's really, really in a tough state here, guys. It's, you know, look, like I'm looking at the lineup. I've watched enough hockey for 30 years. This isn't the worst team in the National Hockey League, okay? I'm not calling them to win the Stanley Cup or anything like that. It's not the worst team in the National Hockey League. But since December 2nd, they have been. Yeah. Like, it's a month and a half of hockey. They've been the 32nd best team in the league. Like, this is, you know, what's the old joke, guys? To call this a train wreck is an affront to the railroad industry, right? Yeah. You know, it's not pretty here, boys.
Yeah, beyond that, I mean, they have two MVPs in the lineup every single night. And yeah, you need them to score as well.
They're not scoring.
They scored zero goals yesterday as well, but generally they have not been the issue. Like, if they miss the playoffs again, which will be the third time in the last 5 years with these two players pretty close to the peak of their powers, not just, you know, and the Leafs have been a failure too in the Austin Matthews era to there's just really no doubt about it. You have to win a playoff series when you have the four players making the money that they have at the top of the cap sheet in Toronto.
Yes.
But to miss the playoffs in 3 of the 5 years, considering the play of those two players over the last half decade, I mean, are we talking about one of the biggest colossal failures in recent sports history?
Well, sure. I mean, yeah. And you know what? Like, the last two seasons, they weren't supposed to be this team anymore. You know, two seasons ago, they were swimming along. They were sitting in second place when the league stopped for COVID, right? Then they came back 5 months later and played a series and lost. And that was such a stupid playoffs. I put no stock in it, not even for the Oilers, but for any team. That was the bubble playoffs were goofy. Then last year, they were a second place team again behind the Leafs. And they went in the playoffs and they lost. They said, okay, you know, we lost. We got to get deeper and blah, blah, blah. But the point is, they've been building. They've been, the last 2 years, a good regular season team. Not just average. They've been a pretty good team. And they thought they were past this whole lose six in a row thing. You know, they come out, they're 16-5 the first 21 games. They're the best team in the league. Points percentage after 21 games. Like, they're doing okay, you know? And then, wow, boom, like 15 games of absolute, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, things are happening pretty fast here. Like, this thing's kind of swimming out of control faster than you could imagine. And yes, you know, there's no question. Dave Tippett's deal's up at the end of this year. Dave isn't a young coach that needs a new contract. So I'm not, if they don't make playoffs, Dave Tippett won't be back, I would think. Ken Holland's got 2 years left at $5 million per. I'd be darn surprised if any owner let him go with the state of the economy in the National Hockey League right now. So Ken Holland's going to keep building this thing. The question is who he's building it around.
Yeah, the guy at the very top, very good, and the guy just below him, also very good. But you need to get a goaltender to make it all work. Spec, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
All right, boys, thanks for having me.
See you, Mark. Mark Spector of Sportsnet. So, yeah, I threw it out on Twitter. Like, what is the comparable for this, Stephen? Because you, as much as hockey in the National Hockey League is a team game and, yeah, really one player, if you have a bad goaltender, it's really hard to overcome that. Generally, if you have the best player, he eventually not only, you know, wins a bunch of playoff series, like wins a Stanley Cup. The best players in this league, the best player, like not just having a one-off season like Taylor Hall did, but the guys that are always in the top five in the Hart Trophy discussion, they win Stanley Cups, and the Oilers have two of them. Like, the idea that they could miss the playoffs for the third time in 5 years, you almost have to leave the sport, unless you want to talk about Mario Lemieux, and David Amber did bring him up. Missed the playoffs in five of his first six seasons in Pittsburgh before winning back-to-back Stanley Cups. But it kind of brings to mind Mike Trout and the Angels, who have only made the playoffs once during his tenure there, and they got swept 3-0. Barry Sanders, at least they were in and around the playoffs, and I know they have a playoff victory in the Barry Sanders era to the Detroit Lions, and Ernie Banks, I guess. But baseball is so different, especially, you know, when you don't have playoffs, you have a World Series, and Ernie Banks never played a playoff game. This is almost unprecedented what we're about to see if it continues in Edmonton.
I think the only comparison right now is it's not just the Angels, it's the Angels last year with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani.
You're right.
They had an MVP and maybe one of the greatest players in history, multiple MVP. Both in their prime, and managed to not make baseball a more expanded postseason than baseball once had anyway. So that's about as close as I can get. But this, I know Spec always, he has joked before that we only call him when things are going to crap in Edmonton, which is true. We do tend to call him immediately, but that but the fact that we've called him twice in the last 3 weeks, what's that tell you? So, from a distance, it's hard to fathom, to be honest. And I know the goaltending stinks, or the goaltending's been mediocre. And I know you can watch what happens to even a good team when bad goals go in. You know, players get tentative. You know, they get defeatist. And the opposite is true, that if you've got a great goaltender who's playing out of his mind, you know, everybody's 6 inches taller, right? It's just one of the truths of the sport. But there's, you know, like, how deep are we into Connor McDavid's career here? And it feels like this thing's on repeat, right? That every year we pretty much, you know, last year was a little different in the Canadian division, et cetera, but that we have this, how can they not be good? How can it be that they're not good?
Yes, and everybody, I even saw Elliot Friedman, you know, talking about the state of the Oilers on Sportsnet the other day, and everybody kind of they tiptoe around the subject of how Connor McDavid feels about all of this. He obviously doesn't feel great, but what they're actually, you know, tiptoeing around is the idea that he might eventually say, "This is I'm when my career's over, I'm going to be a top five player in the history of this league, and for me to not have a chance to win a Stanley Cup throughout my entire prime, I get it. I you guys drafted me and you gave me the contract, even though I took less to be here, to make things easier salary cap wise. That eventually, I mean, there does have to be a breaking point for everybody. And I'm not saying that this is it. And I really don't think that the Oilers are the worst team in the National Hockey League, like they've been since December 2nd. And there hasn't been a ton of games, obviously, also during that span, because they had the couple of weeks off over Christmas. And they were the best team in the National Hockey League before December 1st. But at a certain point here, if you're not even getting a kick at the can, you're not even getting a chance to lose in a Game 7 like Austin Matthews is, there has to be a conversation from Connor McDavid, who these careers do not last 30 years. They last 15, 20 at the very best, that at a certain point, there's going to be rumblings. And I'm not saying it's this year, but yeah, I'm sure if you're in Edmonton, that's what you're most nervous about.
Well, yeah, for sure. Because as you say, he's going to go down. Lord knows where he'll go down in history by the time he's done, if he stays healthy. You know, in terms of his skill set, he may be the greatest player of all time. Like,
yep.
you can make the case. But, you know, maybe I think what I'd worry about if I was in Edmonton is, like, what's in the water? You know, what's going on here, right? Like, everybody, you know, when they ran Peter Chiarelli out of town, everybody was pretty, you know, unanimous that he was a smoking disaster. But, you know, Ken Holland comes in. He's got all kinds of great credentials. He's, you know, one of the great minds in hockey, built a dynasty in Detroit. They lure him out there. They pay him a ton of dough. Well, we don't have to worry now because we got a really good general manager, and Dave Tippett, people respect as a coach. He's had a lot of success. But, you know, look at the number of people who have been involved in running that team during this stretch, the number of coaches, the turnover of general managers. Like, it's almost impossible, Ben. I think it's almost impossible to, you know, have built this thing out from all those first overall picks they had, the draft position they had, building that foundation, and giving multiple people a crack at it, and nobody has been able to figure out, and the latest one being Ken Holland, you know, bet on a 39-year-old broken-down goaltender who played really great last year. But so it's Ken Holland's fault now? Like, again, if you're an Oilers fan, you're way past pulling your hair out.
Yep. Hall of Fame general manager, two MVPs in the lineup night in, night out, and worst team in the league for almost 2 months here. I will say it might give Leaf fans pause when they think about, hey, Jack Campbell, he's having a great season, and he's been a great Toronto Maple Leaf, but you can't pay a 30-year-old what he's going to get on the open market. You go and reset and grab another goaltender. Well, perhaps not as easy as it sounds, as exemplified in Edmonton, and I'd say rather important to have that piece of the puzzle if you hope to win Stanley Cups or just make the playoffs. Speaking of the playoffs, Buffalo Bills with a rematch of the AFC Championship game coming up this weekend at Arrowhead against the Kansas City Chiefs. They also just lost their assistant general manager, and perhaps their offensive coordinator is next to leave town for a promotion. We'll talk to Nate Geary, Bills host, on WGR 550 next. The Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. And there are wins, and then there are beating your hated divisional foe 47-17 in a home playoff game, going seven drives, seven touchdowns, like the Bills did over the Patriots at Orchard Park last weekend, setting up a Sunday nighter affair, rematch, the AFC Championship game. Bills going to Kansas City to play the Chiefs. Let's talk to Nate Geary, Bills host on WGR 550. How's it going, Nate?
It's going very well, yeah. The lead up to this game, I'm looking forward to it. I will say, though, I did like playing on Saturday last week, having Sunday to kind of kick my feet up, watch football, and not really feel any sort of way short of just let's relax and watch a couple of teams I don't care about beat each other up. So, you know, for the Bills' sake, they're going to be the night cap. They're going to be the weekend cap of this, and they're likely going to have the most eyes of any game this weekend. And it'll be great. I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, the quarterback matchup is maybe well-noted or overstated at this point. But, I mean, you really can't beat an Allen Mahomes matchup after two guys just threw for a combined 10 touchdowns and 700 passing yards and almost 100 rushing yards combined last week. I don't know how you could really make up a better 1v1 matchup than that.
No, you can't. And, yeah, I should have thought about our media brethren who work in Buffalo about, yeah, I'm sorry that this game is on Sunday, that you have to wait to the end of the weekend slate to get this game in. But, all right, let's start with the quarterbacks then, because, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, he has appeared in a couple of Super Bowls and has a victory. But a lot of people are talking about Josh Allen perhaps being able to take the belt as the best young quarterback in the NFL. Do you see the stakes as that high individually between these two quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's fair. I think you can't even really quite put, I mean, genuinely put Josh Allen in the conversation with Patrick Mahomes until he does win that Super Bowl. And I think part of winning the Super Bowl, if you're Josh Allen and getting sort of in this conversation with Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback or best young quarterback in football, is, you know, in route to doing that and winning a Super Bowl, you're going to have to beat the Chiefs to get there. So it sort of takes away any doubt that, you know, if the Bills were to make a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl but not have to go through the Chiefs, you know, you wouldn't have that sort of backdoor, back alley way of saying, well, yeah, you know, Josh Allen might be the better than Patrick Mahomes, but he hasn't been able to beat him, you know, to get to the Super Bowl. And I think, you know, there's a really good chance the Bills could potentially slay quite a few dragons here going into the Super Bowl. Obviously, the overarching one is finally winning a Super Bowl after losing four straight. I think that's you know, kind of probably marquee slay dragon number one. But that second dragon, you know, they took care of in the wild card last week, and really, I think, officially burying a Patriots dominance over the Bills that has been the better part of 20 years. And, you know, I think they were able to really get that monkey off their back. And the next dragon would be, you know, beating Patrick Mahomes, the team, and the Kansas City Chiefs that eliminated you in the AFC Championship game, one game away from being you know, the representative in the AFC for the Super Bowl. And thirdly, you know, potentially having an opportunity to beat the Titans, the number one seed, who, you know, over their last two games, the Bills have lost. In both circumstances, I think the Bills would likely, I feel, maybe didn't get the right end of the stick. And obviously Josh Allen slips on fourth and one at the goal line to seal that deal on Monday Night Football this year, and then going back to last year where the Titans ended up getting their game pushed to a Tuesday night because of COVID, and you know, having that game play out the way that it did. I know the Bills didn't really have a good taste in their mouth after that either. So, you know, they'd have a really strong opportunity, and who knows if that Super Bowl might be against Tom Brady and really be able to go full circle on essentially, you know, slaying five unbelievably you know, franchise defining dragons all in one playoff route would be a pretty amazing run.
Yeah. See, Nate, if all of those things happen, so if the, you know, if the Bills beat Kansas City and then make it to this, beat the Titans and then make it to the, potentially then make it to the Super Bowl and then win the Super Bowl over Tom Brady, wouldn't you be worried about like the world coming to an end the next day? Would, like, isn't that a bit much to ask if, you know,
I realize, I mean, when you repeated it back to me, it did sound like a pretty hefty, you know, like a mountain we've got to climb here. And yeah, I would immediately turn my attention to the next most active volcano, because obviously that would be some tectonic plate would have had to move to create an imbalance in the world. And that would be the only reason the Bills could knock off all five of those things. But listen, like, I when you say it and you say it in totality, and you sort of have to think of all the things that sort of have to happen for the Bills to get all of those things to fall their way. It feels like after last week that, you know, the football world has probably never been more confident in Josh Allen, in these Buffalo Bills. And frankly, you know, this is a team that has the scar tissue of being a you know, I think a couple of plays away. I thought they got taken care of in the second half against the Chiefs last year in the AFC Championship game. And there was, you know, a lot being made of the picture of Stephon Diggs sort of looking onto the celebration after the game, you know, being the last guy out on the field. And, you know, I think those are defining moments for this group. And listen, I think this group is pretty self-aware. And by group, I mean the core of Bills players, right? Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds, Matt Milano and Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley. And you start to go down the list of this core group of Bills players. And I don't think it's lost on them either that this window with how the NFL works, this may be the last time they really get to run it back with this exact group. And, you know, things get Josh Allen's contract kicks in 2 years, and next year he becomes a far more expensive asset on this team. And, you know, as we know right now, teams that end up paying their quarterback top dollar or top market dollar have not been able to really find that long-term Super Bowl success. And, you know, the Chiefs haven't done that with Patrick Mahomes' contract yet either. That kicks in next season. So the Bills and Chiefs, I want to say that it's the next Manning and Brady. But those guys weren't paid at the level that these two guys are now going to be paid over the next decade. And I think that's something to keep in mind. And I think it's not lost on this group that this might be their real shot with the guys they've got in this locker room to win a Super Bowl. And I definitely think that's a motivating factor for these guys.
You know, Nate, like, and again, by the way, I wasn't suggesting that can't happen or it won't happen. I actually kind of chances to run the table here, but I just wonder, you know, look,
my friend.
Yeah, yeah. And I've you know, you've been around Buffalo sports for a while, not, you know, this, the Bills, of course, but also, you know, the Sabres, and like, mm-hmm. bad things have happened, right? There've been some good teams to whom bad things have happened over the years. What's the kind of the mood You watched a perfect football game last week, right? It's like a wish fulfillment. Yeah. That's 7 for 7. Josh Allen looks like the second coming of name your great Hall of Fame quarterback. It's all falling into place. You've got a good organization. You've got an organization where people are cherry picking your executives now, right? Like, I don't think anybody came looking for Buddy Nix.
No.
So, are people? Do people feel like it's manifest destiny now? And this is for real, or are they waiting, for the rug to be pulled out?
Well, listen, as much as Bills fans would tell you that this is manifest destiny and this is a collision course with destiny, I think a lot of people will always have, the bad luck or the whatever sports curse they believe in. And listen, I think recent history shows that some of these organizations that span professional sports, I think of the Cubs, I think of the Red Sox in this, teams that have been, 100 plus year droughts of not winning a championship, being able to win. I think it just kind of goes to show you that it really is in every other year or every year sort of thing in pro sports is, a lot of it is luck. But a lot of it is timing and situation. And so I think for the Bills and listen, I was explaining this yesterday. We were watching here locally, the MSG, Madison Square Garden Network, carries the Sean McDermott show. And we were watching that live. And after the Sean McDermott show, they did a top 10, under the radar draft picks in Bills history. And I was watching it with my girlfriend. And, it sort of reminded that the Bills were a play or two away from being the AFC's first team to represent the AFC in the first Super Bowl, but it ended up being the Kansas City Chiefs. So this also, guys, is a rivalry that dates back to, the AFL days and goes back to the very first Super Bowl where the Chiefs beat the Bills and end up, being the representative in the AFC for the very first, Super Bowl against the Packers. So I just think, for me, the confidence, it's all stemming from the Bills having Josh Allen. I mean, knowing what he's capable of on a given night against really anybody, against the number two passing defense in the league last week, the New England Patriots. I mean, that's what he did against them. And I think if you are a San Francisco 49ers fan, right, you think you've got a pretty good team, but you have Jimmy Garoppolo and you probably have the worst remaining quarterback in the playoffs right now. And I think there's a level of trust that you really like Kyle Shanahan and you do believe you have a good football team, but that everything would have to go perfectly if you're going to win with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I think if you're the Chiefs, if you're the Bills, if you're the Buccaneers and the Green Bay Packers, there's a real sense that, you've got a quarterback that in any given moment can simply win a game regardless of how good the other defense or how good the other quarterback is playing. And when you have that, there is an underlying confidence that's there. And I think Bills fans are starting to sort of make peace with the fact that they do have a quarterback that in any given moment can do things on the field that one or two other guys in all of the world can do. And I think when you start to come to terms with that, the underlying confidence then sort of follows and you sort of feel like, okay, yeah, you're facing Patrick Mahomes, but, I like my guy. And I do think that mentality has really started to sort of hit home here in Buffalo.
Well, and that's why it gets the marquee time slot of that Sunday night affair.
Sure.
But, yeah, Patrick Mahomes playing pretty well himself right now. Had over 400 yards passing. And understandably, the Steelers weren't exactly a juggernaut headed into the playoffs. But that team as a whole, I think they've won 10 of their last 11 games. It is not the same conversation we were having about the Chiefs early this season. They've changed their offense. They've been a little bit more methodical. How different are these two teams? Like if we look back to last year's AFC Championship game, like what is the biggest difference in this matchup between these two teams?
I would probably say both teams' offensive lines. The Bills weren't really able to take advantage of, the disarray on the Kansas City offensive line. And obviously they lose Eric Fisher in that game. The Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. Then the next, in the Super Bowl, he gets, pressured more than any quarterback in NFL history in a single game, 29 pressures. The Buccaneers, the Chiefs gave up against the Buccaneers defense in that Super Bowl. And it was sort of primary, reason number one that the Chiefs completely remade four of the five positions were not on the team or players that filled the left guard or left tackle through right guard positions. They go out and draft Creed Humphrey, the center out of Oklahoma, a couple of picks right after the Bills, by the way, picked Boogie Basham. And he goes on to be the first all-pro center in quite some time for them. And that's what I would say with Kansas City, the biggest difference from last year. I think we'd say the biggest difference from week 5, where the Bills went into Kansas City, beat them 38 38 to 20 in that game. I think the biggest difference for them is that their defense is playing much better now. The Chiefs, through the first six games, were playing at a clip where basically they were the worst defense over the last 5 years. They were giving up that much. And for me, a big reason for that change was getting Chris Jones back into the interior. He didn't play in that first matchup in week 5 against the Bills. He will be playing this week, and he's no longer playing edge where he started the season. When they went out and traded and acquired Melvin Ingram, it allowed them to move Chris Jones back to his original position, and now they're getting really good pressure. And I think they're pressuring the quarterback just about better than anybody in the NFL right now with Ingram and Jones. So that's something the Bills are going to have to really manage and contend with. But I would also argue the Bills' offensive line is playing at a level that we simply have not seen them play. I thought it was one of the reasons they lost that game last year in the AFC Championship game. And I think moving forward, this offensive line with Ryan Bates starting at left guard, I think he's opened up a lot of things scheme-wise for Brian Daboll. The Bills are a much better running team right now than they were with Devin Singletary as sort of the workhorse than they were in Week 5, and obviously where they were last year in the playoffs. So these two teams, I think, are vastly different than they were last year in the 2021 AFC Championship. I think these teams are vastly different teams than they were in Week 5 of this season. So it's really hard for me to maybe look back at that game and take just about anything out of it, short of me saying I think that Josh Allen can play just as good, if not better, in this game. And I would almost be willing to bet anything that Patrick Mahomes will play better this time around than he did in Week 5.
Yeah, Buffalo Bills fans definitely hoping that is the case. Let's hope that the reality lives up to the hype, because there's plenty of hype headed into this one. Nate, appreciate the time as always. Talk again soon.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Anytime. Have a great night. Go Bills.
All right, you too. See you, Nate Geary, Bills host on WGR 550, breaking down the offensive line play. You know what? I'm very interested in this narrative that's been building, and why not? I mean, Josh Allen, he's had plenty of hype over the last couple of years, and he's at times been, I think, the leader betting wise to be the offensive MVP in the National Football League. He had a bit of a toe stubbing, especially when they lose whatever it was, 9-6 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. But you don't play a better game than he played against, as Nate says, the third best passing defense in the NFL and the Patriots last week, going 7-for-7 on touchdowns. He had, three incompletions all game? But he is playing Patrick Mahomes. I feel like we're already ready to give him the belt as the best young quarterback in the league if he wins this one football game. Patrick Mahomes had over 400 yards passing last week. He looked pretty Patrick Mahomes-like, Steven, and he has a Super Bowl, and he's been to another, and he was one stupid offsides away from beating the Patriots and being in another one and maybe winning another one. I get it. Josh Allen has been very good. He's also had his moments where he hasn't looked ready for the moment in the playoffs, and I'm thinking back to that AFC Championship game, especially in the second half last year against the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, maybe he can overcome that, but I really do feel like we're putting the cart ahead of the horse here a little bit when we compare Josh Allen to, I think, the quarterback that defines this generation in Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, probably. You know, there's different development curves, though, right? And, you know, like, Patrick Mahomes arrived kind of, you know, fully formed, and surprised a lot of people, including people who had a chance to draft him and didn't draft him. But he was Patrick Mahomes, you know, almost from the minute he stepped on a field in the National Football League. Josh Allen was drafted, and everybody said he was a project, right? That he's, you know, big, strong guy, big, strong arm, right? Not very accurate. He runs the ball, but NFL quarterbacks don't do that, or you have to kind of train him away from that eventually, because otherwise you'll just get broken down and not have much of a career. And, you know, there have been, you know, during the time, I would say even during the season, Ben, you know, there was a point this season where Josh Allen's numbers, like kind of his metrics, were worse than they were the year before.
That's right.
But you see but the progress, right? I think the thing is, you see you saw the raw materials, and you saw him early on in his Buffalo career. You know, you saw the arm, but you saw him make some mistakes, and you saw him try and throw passes where he shouldn't. Now, they got him Stephon Diggs, which sure helped. You know, like that's the most important development for him, probably, was that they got him an elite wide receiver to work with. But I think it's taken him a little bit longer, not very long, really, but taken him a little bit longer to kind of match up his physical skills with, you know, the ability to play the game in the National Football League to play at that level, to understand what's in front of them, to make the right judgments, you know, in the second or two. So he didn't arrive fully formed, but the product you see now, like even different from the beginning of the season, I'd argue, is, you know, he's different than Patrick Mahomes, but he's spectacular. You know, he's a spectacular talent. Now, that, you know, that doesn't push Patrick Mahomes aside for all the reasons you just said. And they are kind of, you know, chalk and cheese, right? They play the game a different way. But, yeah, I think it's a bit of a lesson that, you know, sometimes, again, there hasn't been anything with Josh Allen where you went and wanted to give up on him like teams have given up on so many high draft pick quarterbacks the last few years. You always, you know, there was always lots to hope on. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, I think it's kind of the excitement with him is like where he is right now. And, you know, what you saw last week and, you know, holy smokes. Now, you know, there's still a big task ahead of him. There's a big task ahead of him this year. But, yeah, all arrows are pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, and there wasn't even like one nanosecond of that game last week where you're like, oh, there's, you know what? Okay, just got to cut. No, he made no mistakes. No. Three incompletions. It's ridiculous. I was also struck when you know, Nate laid out the path to a Super Bowl for the Buffalo Bills and all the dragons that they could slay. All the formidable opponents, by the way, also, that they would have to go through to win the first Super Bowl in franchise history. It kind of feels this way when you have a I don't know if a cursed franchise is the correct terminology here, although, you know, I'm sure there are people in Western New York who might say that, you know, reaching four straight and winning none of them would be a reason to call this franchise cursed. But I'm thinking back to the 2004 Boston Red Sox, you know, with all their myriad of heartbreaking moments in the 80-plus years before winning their first World Series and having to go down 3-0 to the hated New York Yankees in the American League Championship Series and then coming back to win in a Game 7. Or I'm thinking about the Chicago Cubs and having Rajai Davis hit a home run off Aroldis Chapman and a rain delay. Like, sometimes to break the curse, you got to go through some really, really tough stuff. And I guess it makes it that much more sweet, but it would be perfect from a narrative sense if this is the way it happened.
Well, think about it, right? Wide right and the Music City Miracle and losing the Super Bowl to Mark Rippon and, you know, starting a Super Bowl with Thurman Thomas forgetting his helmet and not knowing where it was. And, like, just the list, you know. Yeah, and you can throw the Buffalo Sabres, no goal Stanley Cup defeat to Dallas in there, too, the one that's still – they're still waiting for the replay. But, yeah, there's a lot of ghosts hanging around that place. And maybe you just kill them all. You just deal with them all in one playoff run. I was joking with Nate about, you know, the likelihood of it, but, you know, it's not that unlikely, Ben. You know, it's absolutely there for them.
Yeah, I mean, they beat them once during the regular season. This team's entire offseason raison d'etre was to beat this team in the AFC, what they thought was going to be an AFC championship game. It ends up being a round earlier in the divisional round of the playoffs. They beat him during the regular season. In fact, that might have been such a high watermark that it was the rest of the season was kind of a letdown at that point, because you can kind of point to that. I mean, they lost the Titans after that before the bye, but that, yeah, things kind of fell apart a little bit after that because it felt like maybe they had accomplished something that they set out to do. That wasn't it. This is it. It's all been leading to this game, and it has the primetime slot of Sunday night. A couple of quarterbacks playing at the peak of their powers. Looks like there's going to be a million points scored. There never is. It never quite goes according to script. So I'll just say right now, Steven, I'm betting the under in this game.
Okay. That sounds like a wise guy move.
Yeah. I guess that's me. All right. When we come back, the players are going to have a counter proposal for the Major League Baseball owners on Monday. Also, robo-umps coming to AAA, perhaps to a Major League Baseball stadium near you soon enough. As the fan drive time continues, Ben Ennis, Steven Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.